Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, February 17, 2017. A top South Sudanese official denies the government had anything to do with disappearances of two South Sudanese in Kenya.
People left the country a long time ago. They are rebels. They have been there outside on their own. If the Kenyan government has decided to accommodate them and welcome them and give them whatever status, that is up to the Kenyan government. The government of South Sudan is not responsible for disappearance in Kenya.
And two South Sudanese bishops who fled to Uganda say South Sudan army is blocking civilians from leaving South Sudan.
We need the government to inform to the army that the road is open. If the roads are open, we can be able to go to even to towns like Morobu, like Yei, like Kanyana. And we talk to our people who are displaced with you.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A United Nations expert group on enforced disappearances is calling on the government of Kenya and South Sudan to reveal the whereabouts of two South Sudanese men who were abducted in the Kenya capital last month. The UN says Dong Samuel Luak, a human rights activist who had been given a refugee status in Kenya, and Agri Idris Bon, chair of the SPLM-IO Humanitarian Affairs Committee, were abducted in Nairobi, reportedly with the involvement of security personnel from both Kenya and South Sudan. South Sudanese government spokesman Michael Makui calls the two missing South Sudanese rebels and says Juba is not responsible for their disappearances.
And if they have disappeared in Nairobi or they are there, this is what we don't know. What I know is that they are rebels.
They are South Sudanese,
rebel in that country,
sir.
It's not the responsibility of the government of South Sudan to be asked about the presence of rebels or disappearance of rebels in another country.
They are South Sudanese. Are you concerned about the whereabouts of the South Sudanese?
Are we in charge of rebel South Sudanese? These are South Sudanese, yes, but they are rebels.
Are you at all concerned? Because, sir, as you said, they are South Sudanese, but as South Sudanese, they are afforded the right to have free speech and the freedom to determine their political ideology. As South Sudanese,
I'm sorry. All these rights and freedoms are afforded to those who are inside South Sudan and not fighting the government. But for a rebel who has decided to take up arms against the government, who has decided to rebel against the government, how do you expect the government to protect him in another country? Whether they are there or not, it is the Kenyan government to answer, not us. If there is anybody to be asked.
This also puts...
How do you ask us about South Sudanese who have rebelled against us and they are fighting us and they are not with us? They did not disappear in South Sudan.
What about the safety of other South Sudanese in Kenya? Does this worry you at all? I mean, if you have two South Sudanese who go missing...
Yes, any South Sudanese who are not part of the rebellion are South Sudanese, and the embassy takes care of them.
Are you aware of the whereabouts of Dong Samuel and Agri Idri? Are you aware...
I'm not aware of their whereabouts. What I know is that they are in Nairobi, in Addis. Not in Addis, they are in Kenya, in Nairobi. This is what I know.
Are you sure they're in Kenya and Nairobi? Because the United Nations is saying that there has been no word of these men since they disappeared.
Well. Then what are you trying to tell me now? Are you telling me that it is the government of South Sudan responsible for their disappearance, if they have disappeared?
No, sir.
What are you trying to tell me?
No, sir. What I'm saying is I'm trying to get your reaction to their disappearance. As I said before, they are South Sudanese.
My reaction is that, okay, if you want my reaction is that these people left the country a long time ago. They are rebels. They have been there outside on their own. If the Kenyan government has decided to accommodate them and welcome them and give them whatever status, that is up to the Kenyan government. The government of South Sudan is not responsible for whatever to do with their presence or disappearance in Kenya. So if there is anybody to be asked, it is the Kenyan government that should be asked, not us. Unless you have a report or evidence that these people came to South Sudan and they disappeared, yes, this is where you can ask us.
Experts are asking South Sudanese authorities to guarantee the safety and protection of both men. Is that something that you can agree to?
Listen, my daughter. The government of South Sudan does not guarantee the safety of a rebel.
That's South Sudan's government spokesman, Michael Makui. He was speaking to Ayen Bier from Juba this past hour. Another top South Sudanese government official has resigned from his post. Minister of Labor and Public Service, Lieutenant General Gabriel Duop Lam, accuses the Kiir administration of failing to tackle the country's problems. Lam says he's frustrated over the inability of President Kiir to get anything done, and in his resignation letter, he says he has defected to SPLA-IO faction loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
In his one-page resignation letter, Lieutenant General Gabriel Duop Lam says he has resigned from the position of Minister of Labour, Public Service and Human Resource Development from the transitional government of national unity. Information Minister Michael Makuei emerged from a cabinet meeting to confirm Lam's defection.
The Minister of Labour, Public Service and Human Resource Development, Mr. Gabriel Duop Lam, has defected. And earlier, of course, as you know, his deputy had defected earlier.
Labour Deputy Minister Nasike Alan Lochul resigned last December. Lam did not provide the exact reasons for his resignation later, but expressed his frustration with the Kiir administration over its inability to restore peace and stability across the country. Makwe says it is Lam's job to fix the public service problems in South Sudan.
He is the Minister of Public Service, and if he is the Minister of Public Service, if he is seeing that there are any shortcomings or any defects in the public service, then he is the right person to fix it right. What did he do before he could talk of inability?
Lam was appointed a minister last April following the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity per the requirements of the 2015 peace agreement. He was one of the SPLM-IO government officials who remained loyal to First Vice President Taban Dengai when he was appointed to replace former First Vice President Riek Machar, who fled Juba shortly after violence erupted between his forces and government forces in July. Lieutenant General Lam's resignation comes just days after Lieutenant General Thomas Cirilo Swaka, the SPLA Deputy Chief of Staff for Logistics, resigned from his position in the army. But Makwe insists the resignations and defections do not threaten the stability of the Kiir administration.
By the way, for your correction, the defection of AOB,
defection of 102 does not mean anything. It will not have any impact, and it is just individual behavior.
Makwe says Lieutenant General Lam left for the Sudanese capital Khartoum shortly before his resignation letter was received by President Kiir. Wake Simon Wudu, VOA News, Juba.
Church leaders in Yei River State, Morobo, and Lujulu counties say they are concerned about citizens trapped in rural areas due to the ongoing conflict. The bishops of Morobo and Panyana dioceses say those who were unable to flee fighting between government forces and militia groups in the area are hiding in the bush. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
Right Reverend Seme Nigo, Bishop of Panyana Diocese, and Right Reverend James Kenyi Elia, Bishop of Morobo Diocese, accuse government forces of blocking roads, making it nearly impossible for civilians to seek refuge in camps in northern Uganda's Koboko district, where both bishops have relocated due to the violence. Bishop Seme Nigo says he talked to a few people in his diocese who are living in fear.
The security situation is not okay. They do tell me wherever government passes along and when comes across any of the civilians, you will be in a big problem. So otherwise, they are all in hiding places, not in open.
Bishop Seme says government soldiers have blocked all roads in the area, including the highway between South Sudan and Uganda. SPLA spokesman Brigadier Lulu Raikong says government soldiers deployed in the area have lived in harmony with local civilians for a long time and does not understand why people would hide from soldiers.
So if there are some areas that are being manned by forces against the government, and especially where SPLA has no presence, then of course they would be right in saying that. But in areas under our control, freedom of movement is guaranteed. And it is being ensured, and in some cases, we even give escorts to ensure that civilians move without being harmed.
Bishop Seme called on authorities to work harder to achieve peace so that people can return to their homes.
Without that peace, things would not work well. And for us who are incorporated as the new bishops, we have a big interest to work some of our people, but now it has become very hard for us to meet the people.
Bishop James Kenyi Elia says he is frustrated that he cannot help his people because of the fighting.
I am a person who looks after the flock of God. And God has given so honorable. Now that the people are not there, I have to come and follow where they are.
Bishop Kenyi says he is ready to return to his country if security forces open the roads and allow South Sudanese to move freely. The bishop believes if he returns to South Sudan, fellow Christians hiding in bush will have hope and also return home.
We need the government to inform to the army that the roads is open. If the roads are open, we can be able to go to even to towns like Morobu, like Yei, like Kanyana. We talk to our people who are displaced within.
Aid agencies say the security situation in many parts of Yei River State, including Yei, Morobo, Lanya, and Kajokeji, remains precarious. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The South Sudan government says it wants to restart oil production at 6 oil facilities in the former Unity State, where production was halted because of the ongoing fighting. Government spokesman Michael Makoi says the SPLA will deploy more soldiers in the area to secure the facilities and protect workers. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Juba.
Makoi told reporters after today's cabinet meeting in Juba that the government has directed Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lul Garkweth to start production at 6 oil fields in the former Unity State. Makoi says the government is now asking all the companies that left during the violence to return and resume the production.
They stopped production due to the crisis, and now efforts are underway for this field to resume production. And before they could resume production, the companies which were there had given certain conditions to the ministry so that they are enabled to start the production.
Makoi acknowledges that some of the conditions demanded by the companies for resuming production have not been met. He did not elaborate. Makoi says the government will deploy more troops to the area, but did not mention how many.
The security sector organs have been directed to deploy additional forces in the oil fields for the protection of the oil. Then, according to the established system of the protection of the oil fields, there are three layers of protection which are usually put in place. The outer layer is the army, the second layer is the national security, and the third layer inside is the police.
Last month, the South Sudan government signed a 5-year agreement with China National Petroleum Corporation and Petronas of Malaysia to increase oil production. The deal requires the two companies to significantly increase crude oil exports. Makoi says once the oil fields are secured and oil production resumes, the economy should improve.
The oil companies who do feel insecure, they are made to feel that they are secure so that they continue with the production of the oil for the improvement of our conditions and our security situation.
Up to 98% of the government's revenue comes from oil production. South Sudan produces about 130,000 barrels a day. That is down from more than 300,000 barrels per day in 2011 after South Sudan gained its independence. In September, Petroleum Ministry officials vowed to increase oil production to 200,000 barrels per day, but that has yet to happen. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, UN is appealing for funds to help South Sudanese. We'll have details when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you using your full potential to build your life?
I can really say yes, and it's a yes with capital letters, because it depends on you after all. There is no way someone else will come from nowhere to come and push you up. It depends on you and your thoughts. So I, for one, say I'm using all my potentials to build onto my goal.
The energy I'm applying is enough, but the way we earn, you cannot, because we put much and you get less. Yeah, that is it.
Yes, I see my full potential to build my life. Because right now, what I'm even doing, my education right now, what I'm going through school for, I'm seeing potential in me. So I think yes, I know yes for sure. I see potential in me to build my career.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The number of people in need in South Sudan is up by at least 1.5 million from last year, according to the International Organization for Migration. But the organization's funding appeal is down by about $3 million. Ayen Bior has details from Washington.
Last year, the UN projected that at least 6 million South Sudanese would need humanitarian assistance to meet the needs of the most vulnerable. IOM appealed for a little over $80 million in 2016. This year, IOM's funding appeal is down, but the needs have risen. At least 7.5 million South Sudanese will need assistance this year, according to the IOM. It is asking for $76.8 million to meet their needs in 2017. Ashley McLaughlin, a Juba-based IOM spokesperson, says the decrease in their funding appeal is not an indication that life is getting any easier in South Sudan. She says the organization takes into account existing capacities, and logistics include whether or not equipment and medicine is available in the local market.
So when you're looking at something like a healthcare, providing healthcare assistance, there's much that goes into that. So it's buying equipment, it's buying medicine, it's hiring staff, right? So we have doctors on hand, local, we have clinicians, we have midwives. So the funding does go towards staff, but when you have multiple operations going around across the country at the same time, you do need a lot of staff who are nimble and ready to go.
Earlier this week, the UN Human Rights Office launched its largest appeal when it announced it would need at least $253 million U.S. dollars to pay for racial and religious discrimination and other global violations rising across the globe. UN Human Rights spokesperson Ravina Shamdasani in Geneva told VOA that increased needs are a response to the erosion of human rights values and the laws established after World War II.
There were human rights laws and principles that we took for granted, that states voluntarily signed on to, that are now being questioned, that are being reopened, and in some cases that are being overturned. This is really the worrying part of the state of the world's human rights today.
McLaughlin says insecurity is not the only hurdle aid workers face when delivering assistance. She says the lack of roads make it much harder to deliver aid.
If we're unable to pre-position items in time, often life-saving items have to be sent by flight or by helicopter, which is sometimes three times more expensive than moving something by road.
The UN has appealed for $1.6 billion in 2017 for the South Sudan Humanitarian Response Plan, or HRP, to reach about 6 million people in need of assistance. The IOM's $76.8 million appeal was developed in conjunction with the HRP framework. A large portion of the donor money will be used for shelter and non-food items for internally displaced people and refugees. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
United Nations aid agencies warn they have a 2-month window of opportunity in drought-stricken Somalia to increase emergency assistance for millions of people and avert a catastrophe. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations estimates half of Somalia's population, or 6.2 million people, are threatened by the drought, which is spreading from the hard-hit northern regions. Over the past week, representatives of the World Food Programme and the UN Children's Fund visited some of the worst affected areas in the northern Puntland region. They describe scenes of utter devastation where people have reached the limit of their abilities to cope. WFP Country Director Laurent Bouquera says in one village, about 500 women and children were living precariously in makeshift huts surrounded by dead livestock. He says the men had left the village in search of grazing land and water for the cattle that were still alive. Speaking on a telephone line from Nairobi, Bouquera told VOA, "There is a short window of opportunity in which aid agencies can increase emergency operations and prevent the worst from happening."
The severity, the spread of the drought and of the situation this time around is bigger, is larger geographically than what happened in 2010-11. Therefore, if we don't respond fast enough, if we don't respond at scale, yes, we can prepare ourselves for a catastrophe which is at least to the size and the intensity of the situation we experienced over there in 2010-11.
Nearly 260,000 people, half of them children under 5, died during the famine in Somalia between 2010 and 2012. UNICEF projects the number of severely malnourished children in Somalia could reach 270,000 over the coming months. Although the situation is extremely grave, WFP's Bouquera says Somalia has a better chance of averting a catastrophe this time around. He says the international community has been alerted to the crisis for some time and has begun responding earlier to this emergency than to the last. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South African protesters marched today demanding restitution from a major bank for its apartheid-era profits, just part of growing movement to address deep racial imbalances. But there is a larger call for land to be forcibly distributed to disfranchised black South Africans. President Jacob Zuma has indicated through proposed legislation that he may be prepared to just do that. VOA's Anita Powell has more from Pretoria.
A small protest for a movement that has captured the attention of South Africa's most powerful players. Some 200 activists from the far-left Black First, Land First movement gathered wearing Land or Death t-shirts and sang protest songs seeking restitution for apartheid-era profits from a major South African bank. But as their name indicates, this pressure group has its sights set on something far bigger. They want land to be given to Black South Africans as compensation for colonial-era land seizures. And they're not the only ones seeking to rebalance the scale. Also on Friday, President Jacob Zuma referred a bill back to Parliament that seeks to redress racial imbalances in land ownership. Lindsay Masdorp, national spokesman for Black First, Land First, says the government's efforts are insufficient. His group objects to the current policy that allows landowners to hold out until the selling price is acceptable. He says Zuma's constitutionally based approach is also not enough.
We're saying black people should be buying back stolen land. We agree that we should not. White people didn't come here and just start speaking to us and say, hey, let me take it. It was a violent process, and it continues to be a violent process. When we confront violence, we will do so with violence too. Sometimes it will be with words, sometimes it will be through dialogue, but other times it will be physical as well.
In recent years, anger over land inequality has been accompanied by violence against owners of farms and small holdings. South African police typically report about 500 incidents each year. Unemployed 45-year-old protester Simon Kufelo says his lack of land affects him deeply.
When talking about the debate of land,
are becoming too emotionally, because at this present, we shouldn't have been talking about this. I mean, we have made about 23 years in democracy, and then there's nothing that is happening with the land distribution. 80% is still whites having 80% of land, and we, the majority, we are having 20%. I think if they can make sure that they are no more going on the snail pace, but try to pick up and move faster like a Ferrari, I think.
That 80% statistic has been thoroughly debunked by government land surveys. A recent private survey looking at residential property says Black South Africans own 52% of the value of the nation's homes, and that figure is rising. However, nearly 80% of South Africa's population is Black, meaning they are still underrepresented in this domain. This imbalance clearly preoccupies President Jacob Zuma, who spent about 15 minutes of his recent 90-minute address to the nation talking about radical economic transformation, a plan to use government programs and resources to encourage more economic participation by Black South Africans.
The skilled nature of ownership and leadership patterns needs to be corrected. There can be no sustainability in any economy if the majority is excluded in this manner.
But, says Associate Professor of Economics Christopher Malikane of the University of the Witwatersrand, Zuma's ambitious plans may be just political maneuvering. Analysts say Zuma's growing unpopularity led the long-ruling African National Congress to lose ground in last year's local elections. As a result, the party is now divided and scrambling to gain support ahead of crucial national elections in 2019. This radical economic transformation, Malikane says, may be a casualty of the current rift in the ruling party.
It is the struggle between these two factions, basically within the ANC, that is going to lead the ANC not to coherently implement what the president is talking about, because his faction itself is not 100% in control of the ANC.
But many protesters on Friday said they have little interest in watching this complex debate go through the political and legislative motions. They want land, they say, and they want it now. Anita Powell, VOA News, Pretoria.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Bandito by Emmanuel Camilo.
Teba kontang nga iti wano teno yo bandito ninde. Daka teba kontang nga panga wano teno yo bandito ninde. Modi wello di sinne bivanga, modi wello di sinne birunga, modi wello di sinne bota. Modi wello kere ne di taibano me. Daka ba matino ninde. Modi wello kere ne di taibano me. Dakapa matino ni ninde
anida ngo damru ngo tarango no
dene no sono ti dekada o tabano
anga soy ni meditize it
my vi na de no pinga ndau ta bindi funo badir yo no ai tuta kitito tele no bandito duta matani no donze tia kindo no so ni tamar koneta ntombo ni ta zei ni ta zoko decide with a level kei bo bidu nyoko de piti kalombo tiru tizo zuru naso. Nazangwe ya bikambe del bada wude kata soko. Na del baku del bambe na delo bibi nabo. Dize na tono libo ni da wali tandobo. Niti delo te yelwo veni no ka bandifo. Dize na go kumrata do tizi yendu na so. Kene ata filindo wabaye wati bimuro. Nibe dele bandifo nibe zine deke zondo. Tabindi tabiso nita pake na la sondo. Nebe kamalangan nema tateno medao.
Ayi walanga ngine akumba bino veni deno biurundogi. Ayi walanga ngine apakure bino veni deno bidaundogi.
Kawili nyone akumba sonyo mina evita. Kawili nyone apakure ngime divisola. Kawili nyone akumba.
We have been listening to Emmanuel Camilo with the song Bandito. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us. Have a safe and peaceful weekend. And tune in on Monday for the latest news on South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kesi ni eikala sundu, bakure ndingo kase ni mabano vene.